A January for Jane, A Seasons of Serendipity Bride, Chapter 4. Chapter 4. Jane picked nervously at the bottom rim of her wine glass with her fingernail, making a barely perceptible tinkling noise that satisfied her anxieties. She had spent the afternoon comforting Robin in his teething pain. Graham had surprisingly stayed away in the study for the large majority of the day. It was not abnormal for the two of them to see very little of each other, even though they shared a home. But since the formal betrothal, she had not experienced a day of largely separate activities, making her now worry. For months, Jane had become an expert in keeping her schedule in such a way that Mr. Hamilton would not find need to accompany her in the mundane tasks of her role. And before he stormed into her bedroom to offer they wed right away, her suite of rooms was a sanctuary for her own amusements and entertainments, usually in the company of her nephew. But the man across from her shifted nervously in his seat, and Jane's mind naturally began to conjure a litany of reasons for him to suddenly wish to call off their betrothal. This did not make logical sense, but men and women in the throes of Cupid's passions rarely relied upon such common methods as reason and logic to dictate their behavior. The silence in the dining room escalated Jane's fears, to the point of her legitimately worrying she was about to lose the only man she would indeed throw caution to the wind for, and have jumped into a carriage racing for Gretna Green, no better than a lovesick maiden. Realizing what that signified, she drew in a breath and held it. Within a moment, she was prepared to blurt out she would marry him that evening, and they would spend this night and every night thereafter as husband and wife. Her English notions of decorum be damned. Graham cleared his throat to signal he wished to speak, before Jane gathered up the courage to claim her Scotsman. "There has been a change in my plans for our betrothal, and I am anticipating you will be in agreement." A hollow ripple of despair trembled within her heart, resonating in her lower stomach, as Jane's worst fear appeared to be coming true. She opened her mouth to speak, yet the strong woman she had relied upon for so much in the year and quarter since she had lost her father utterly failed her by refusing to surface. Graham waited patiently during her silence. Footmen began carrying in delicate porcelain vessels of stewed meats, vegetables, and a healthy portion of bread. The rustic fare of Starvet House offered Jane a much more palatable dining experience than the fussy plates of London and high society. And though she had been hungry before, she allowed her plate to be served with food she knew was unlikely to be eaten. As with her courage, so had gone her appetite. "I shall leave on the morrow to Edinburgh. I finalize the plans for the resurrection of Blaylock and must see to hiring craftsmen to bring back and begin the foundation work." The idea of building in early February perplexed Jane. Although the winter had been milder than she had expected, it was not suitable temperatures for her to imagine men working on such a structure. "Will it not be too cold?" she managed. Graham helped himself to heaping mouthfuls of his dinner before responding. Jane continued to pick at her wine glass in front of him. He worried for a moment that the woman wasn't eating when she finally lifted a fork and half-heartedly poked at her stewed venison. "With my injury, I did not direct the clearing of the property as much as I should. Now that my staff here and those I sent to my father's estate are healed and hearty, we can begin work. It will still be long into late March before the foundation stones are set, as I am intending on a significant improvement over my great-grandfather's modest home." Jane nearly choked on her sip of wine as the man in front of her used the term "modest" to refer to a home no one in their right mind would have declared so. Mention of his father's home, though, piqued her interest. "I forgot you did not need to live here at Starvet with me. You risked the gossip and danger to your reputation to remain here instead of moving to your father's estate." Graham flashed her a roguish smile, revealing his dimples set handsomely against his dark features. "You might say there is nothing at Godadyn Castle to attract me there." Still slightly shocked at the weight of knowing Mr. Hamilton planned to wed her all along, Jane tried to move the subject along to a more comfortable topic. "I confess I have never visited a castle, though in novels they are depicted as cold, drafty dwellings." Graham lifted a trench of bread and began soaking up the gravies remaining on his plate. "Never pictured yourself the fair princess in the glorious fortress." Graham laughed as he teased her a bit, but Jane shook her head. "No, I'm afraid the dreams and desires for my future were of a much more modest nature." She threw the words back at him, denoting she would have happily found the original Blaylock as an excessively acceptable home. An errant thought crossed Jane's mind as she chewed another few bites, though her appetite had not fully returned. "After we are married, if you should like a spell of time away from this house together?"
"That is not necessary."
Graham dismissed her idea of a short wedding trip to his father's castle before she could fully utter it. Jane did not push, though she felt inordinately hurt he would dismiss the idea completely out of hand. She knew their match would never be one his family was likely to relish, the second son of a duke marrying a nearly penniless woman from a small estate in England. Why, to reflect on their disproportionate statuses in society, Jane once more began to feel wholly inadequate and foolish for spurning the man's original insistence they wed right away. And here he was to leave for Edinburgh at dawn, and she was powerless to change his mind. Or was she? Jane dropped her fork with a definitive clatter and interlaced her fingers to prop up her chin. With her elbows on the table, she leaned forward and stared at her Mr. Hamilton over the romantic glow of the table's candlelight. "Would you still be setting your plans to abandon me tomorrow if I called two witnesses into this room and pronounced you to be my husband?" Graham's eyes widened at the determined look on Miss Bennet's face, and his masculine tendencies made their sentiments known on the matter right away. But he was neither a beast nor a simpleton. He knew this woman's heart so dearly wished to accept him as her husband, in the manner in which she had been raised to know as proper and good in the eyes of the Lord. And he would be far less willing to see about the business of rebuilding their home once he had the delights of Jane Bennet in his bed to keep him well occupied. And so his tongue became disloyal to his baser needs, but elevated him to the superiority of a gentleman. "If ye called two witnesses into this room and declared yourself my wife, I would dismiss them just as quickly and claim ye as my own. That I can promise ye, my lass." He allowed his promise to hang in the air, causing both of them an undue amount of discomfort as they struggled to suppress their strong attraction and remain proper. She opened her mouth to speak, but he raised a gloved hand to prevent her from casting their lots. "And once we were done, and the dawn did arrive as she is wont to do, I would feel a terrible guilt my actions and words had persuaded you to sacrifice your convictions. It has been nearly 8 months since I first laid my eyes upon you, and 7 since I knew you to be the only woman for my castle." He lifted both hands to remind her of her enormous charity and great work during the fire. It was she who had treated his severe burns before Dr. Simpson could be consulted. It was she who had comforted him over the death of the young child he could not save. It was she who stalked his dreams and waking thoughts like a vision of beauty to entice sailors to their deaths. "And I shall build you a castle, Jane Bennet, one that is not drafty and cold, but warm with our love and open to our friends and family." Jane, however much she did not wish it, began to tear up and feel utterly overwhelmed by the sentiments of her Mr. Hamilton. She uncharacteristically pushed her chair back, not waiting to call a footman, and her sudden action forced Graham to do the same, though his task was far less comfortable. She elegantly walked around the table to him, and to his surprise, stood up on her tiptoes to place a well-meant kiss upon his grisly cheek. "The sentiments you have shared are more than any woman should ever hope to have in her possession from a man she loves. I wish nothing more than for your safe journey, and that we should spend this evening in one another's company. But I fear the second part of that is too much of a challenge for us both." She searched his face for disagreement and found none. Instead, he let out a deep sigh and his shoulders sagged. There was no arguing further time spent together might prove too much of an inducement for hasty action. "I cannot say I enjoy living to your lofty standards, my Jane. But if it is to be my gauntlet to run, then you may count on the fortitude of a Hamilton man to come out the victor." He grinned at his metaphor as she blushed and looked away. He did not like that, so his hand gently nudged her chin back towards him, and it was not a gentle peck Graham bestowed upon her. His lips impressed upon hers his fiery passions and the anticipation of their union in such a sweet torture they were left breathless at its conclusion. Dazed and somewhat altered, Jane began to babble that she must go, and Graham released her with a similar half-considered motion. As Jane left the dining room, her feet felt light and unburdened. And as she retired to her rooms for the rest of the evening, she truly regretted, there would be 3 long weeks of this aching need for his person that surprised her with its fierce intensity.